Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Your number is 877-217-5757. In just a moment, we're going to hear from the Pulitzer Prize-winning author Anthony Doerr, who's back in a huge way with Cloud Cuckoo Land, receiving great attention and outstanding plaudits from critics far and wide. But we do want to note that this is a continuation of our fall membership drive in the WRKF socks were so popular. They're back with a new design. The new WRKF socks feature a couple of headphone-wearing alligators having a conversation on mic, talk Louisiana style. They're green, blue, and ivory. And if you'd like to get those socks and make a contribution to your favorite radio station, we'd like to hear from you. You can support local independent journalism and choose to get the socks as a thank you gift for your membership of $10 a month or more. And the number to call to be part of the family and to show your support for this radio station, which has been around almost 42 years, 855-893-9753. That's 855-893-9753. And as mentioned, we start with the Pulitzer Prize-winning author Anthony Doerr, who is recognized by his colleagues as one of the best craftsmen as far as writing in the world. He doesn't write a lot of books, but when they come out, people take note. I kind of compare him to James Dean, who didn't make many movies. I think he made three, and he's regarded as one of the great actors of all time. The last book from Anthony was the best-selling novel, All the Light We Cannot See, which won the Pulitzer Prize. And good morning to you, Anthony Doerr.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me.
The son of Cleveland, who has lived in Idaho for many years. Why Idaho?
Oh, I fell in love with an Idaho girl in my 20s and was happy to move west. And so happy to be in her hometown. But first of all, didn't James Dean die when he was 24 or something? So I've got to outlast that.
I think you've already done that, but not by much. You've got a lot of a lot of miles to travel, but sometimes it's quality, not quantity. Most people don't realize that Warren Beatty's only made about 20 films in his career. But yet,
that's interesting.
Other than Ishtar.
I'm definitely on board with that. I think quality over quantity is important.
And it's a big book, as were your others. But before we get to the components of Cloud Cuckoo Land, you are a guy who's getting lots of praise that you have before and again for the way you write. People take note of that. They really appreciate your ability and say it's a rare commodity, even among some great authors. What was the catalyst for this?
Oh, gosh, that's very kind, Jim. I don't know. I try not to go on the internet and read any of that stuff. In terms of the catalyst for this book, I was finishing All the Light We Cannot See, which is a 500-page novel set during the Second World War, and primarily in France, although also in Germany and a few other countries. But about 60% of the novel is set in a town called Saint-Malo in Brittany, France, on the coast, just south of Normandy, if folks know where that is. And that has medieval walls around it, about 2 kilometers of medieval walls. And it was a tiny piece of Hitler's vast project to build this thing called the Atlantic Wall, this tyrannical, megalomaniacal project to build a wall all the way down Finland and Denmark and Belgium and down to the Franco-Spanish border. 2,000 miles, thousands upon thousands of metric tons of concrete, you know, slave labor really building this series of fortifications. And of course, it doesn't stand up to the invasion of Normandy, 1944. But every text that I would read about the history of defensive walls would mention the walls of Constantinople. And maybe if you're like me, Jim, in Western history classes that I took in high school, we would get to the fall of Rome. And then the teacher would basically take a sip of water and we're at the Renaissance, and you know, the age of discovery. And we missed 1,000 years in there. And so you think as a kid, you think, oh, that must not much must have happened during that time. So I love to use my project as my books as a way to learn and the way to chase various curiosities. So before I had even finished All the Light We Cannot See in 2014, I print out a copy of this old drawing of the walls of Constantinople as a kind of reminder for what my next project could be. I mean, there were just no idea. They were amazing. They stood for 1,100 years. They were 4 miles long. They were triple walls. There was this inner wall, like 50 feet high, an outer wall, 30 feet high, then a moat. 23 armies over the centuries came and sieged the city and broke themselves against those walls and retreated. And so it allowed the city to accumulate insane wealth. It was really this nexus of, you know, the headquarters for this war, centuries-long war between Christianity and Islam. And among all the things like gold and silver and ivory and olive oil and timber that were accumulated inside the city were books. So around 2015 was when I really settled into the project and started thinking, there's something here. I feel this interest, this like electric interest in the fact that so many books that we have from the ancient world, Greek and Roman texts, about 75% of them survive to the present day only because of libraries inside of Constantinople, where they would be recopied by hand every 100 years or so. So it's just these little acts that some schoolmaster makes to recopy an old copy of Plato or Aristotle or Aeschylus or Aristophanes. That's the only reason we can go to a library today and read those texts.
Well, this novel, Cloud Cuckoo Land, follows five characters in three different historical epics. And Constantinople is part of that, 15th century. Also, Idaho, present-day Idaho, where the author, the talented Anthony Doerr, lives. And then we go into the 22nd century on a spacecraft. It is part of this man's immense imagination and ability to thread these stories together. And you do it in a way that is quite compelling. Tell us more.
Thanks, Jim. So, yeah, so I started with just a girl inside the walls of Constantinople. 1450s were this fascinating time that in many ways have parallels to now, in which new technologies are disrupting old power structures. And All the Light, which was really about the same thing, it was about a new technology, which in that case was the radio, coming into Europe in the 30s and 20s, and especially in the 30s, and really disrupting, you know, what people thought of as the truth. You know, the way the Nazis and the German Socialist Party in the 30s were able to recognize the power of radios, make inexpensive sets and get them into people's homes, really helped them determine a kind of narrative. You know, they cut the price in half of this receiver called the People's Receiver. They cut subscription fees in half and broadened them so that many, many Germans could now listen to the radio. And of course, they broadcast in loudspeakers in all the public places as well. So that was just this crazy new disruptive technology. And in the 15th century, gunpowder is arriving in Europe at the same time as the printing press. And so there's this new, there's this old technology of the walls, this old defensive walls, and then there's this new technology. And like all new technologies, it's almost always young people who recognize the power of it. And this young sultan of the Ottoman army, 19 years old, starts founding, using this big foundry, building these enormous cannons, like Death Star from Star Wars level weapons, that he drags with these huge teams of oxen in this muddy spring weather all the way to the walls of Constantinople to try to make this old 1,100-year-old technology obsolete once and for all. And so as I have this girl inside the city save this very last copy of a very old book during the siege of Constantinople in 1453, I realized the best way to dramatize the power of a single act of stewardship like this, of saving one little copy, one humble copy of a book, is to show that book move through time and show it land in the hands of people who will live long after she's gone from the world. And so I decided to set the book in two other times in which I think technology is really disrupting existing power structures. And one is now, you know, the way information technology is changing everything, the way you and I can speak to each other at the speed of light from Idaho to Louisiana. Just think it's such an interesting time to be alive. And so I have these two characters in the present, Zeno and Seymour. And then, yeah, I took a huge risk. That was a scary moment when I decided to commit to that and had a girl in our future named Constance at a time when I think climate change and the promises or the dangers of artificial intelligence intersect. And so she's living in this confined space, but has access to what she is told anyway is an infinite library, a comprehensive library of information. So I'm asking questions there about Wikipedia and the internet, and does does a single human having access to tons and tons of information, does that actually make us any wiser in the end?
Well, the book is Cloud Cuckoo Land from the amazing Anthony Doerr. The New York Times closed its review by saying Doerr's book is much more than a mechanistic or childlike device for passing time. It's a humane and uplifting book for adults, infused with the magic of childhood reading experiences. Cloud Cuckoo Land is ultimately a celebration of books, the power and possibilities of reading. Manuscripts do burn, but the fact that we have held on to so many and still find continued value in reading them is an aspect of our humanity that this novel justly celebrates. And congratulations for another work that is number two, and I think probably will be number one this week on the New York Times best-selling books list. Anthony Doerr, it's an honor to speak with you. Keep going, and I look forward to keeping in touch with you. I know there'll be more great things to come, and congrats on Cloud Cuckoo Land.
Oh, thanks so much, Jim. I appreciate it. Have a lovely day.
You too, my friend. We'll be back with more Talk Louisiana in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Again, your number is 877-217-5757. talk@talklouisiana.org is our email. Alondra Villarreal is producing, and we thank you for contributing to WRKF. Again, the number is 855-893-9753. No matter how little you have, if it is comfortable for you to expend some of your resources on this vital entity to our community, we welcome any contribution you can make. So again, it's 855-893-9753. I want to thank my dear friend Diane Gaines, who contributed at the end of the program yesterday, who listens, I'm told, on a regular basis in the great city of New Roads. And we want to thank the Jay Singh family. They're matching all donations in loving memory of husband and father, Dr. Jay Singh, cardiologist who was the first immigrant physician to obtain hospital privileges in Baton Rouge. Dr. Jay Singh cherished independent investigative journalism. In his honor, his family wants to encourage us to invest in local news, and that's why the family is doubling the impact of any donation right now by matching your gift of support. So we want you to contribute if you can, and it'd be so nice for you to contribute before 10 o'clock, and we know that you appreciate Talk Louisiana when you contribute this hour. The number again is 855-893-9753. And Stephanie Regal is with us, the editor of the Business Report and also host of Out to Lunch, which airs on WRKF. And I spent some time with her on the air yesterday during All Things Considered. And we'll get Stephanie's take on the wonders of public radio and WRKF. But she is an intrepid reporter, relentless in her pursuit of truth, and she comes up with stories that quite often are breaking news. And good morning to you, Stephanie Regal.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Fine, Stephanie. Sounds like you're out and about, probably following some criminal in your car right now.
I'm tracking down something. Actually, I am in the middle of writing something sort of interesting, so we'll see where it goes.
All right. Well, maybe we'll get a preview before we go off the air. Well, what's going on with Our Lady of the Lake and Mary Bird Perkins?
You know, it's really, I think, one of the saddest stories for Baton Rouge in a long time, because it's just the same old story. The pie here is so small, and we just keep carving it up into smaller pieces because everybody wants their own little share, and it's just such a stupid, futile, greedy mentality. And, you know, you have two institutions that really, I think, have benefited from a long partnership. They entered into an affiliation agreement a decade ago, and they were looking to renew that agreement, began negotiations last year. As they looked towards the expiration of it this year, you know, on how to move forward for the next 10 years and beyond. And we're really working on, I think, a good plan to grow a larger, more regional cancer institute for this market that would attract people here, that would attract, more money here, that would keep people from feeling like they had to go to MD Anderson or, you know, other regional cancer care centers when they get a diagnosis. And somewhere along the way, things went off the rails, and the two sides couldn't come to an agreement. And really, it was a game of brinksmanship, I think. I don't think either side thought the other would walk, and neither would budge. And so at the end of the day, talks broke down, and Mary Bird Perkins ended up partnering with an independent private equity-backed network of oncology providers, and that agreement's going to go into effect in January. And the Lake got mad and said, well, we're going to move forward with our own plans to expand this regional cancer institute and build our own $100 million cancer center on our own campus, which, as you know, is right next door to the Mary Bird Perkins Cancer Center, which is on the Lake's campus. So, you know, as far as who was the bad guy in it, there are two sides to every story. I've read a lot of the documents. I've been yelled at, you know, by board members from both entities. And I think initially, as the two sides were working towards this agreement, and they had hired a consulting firm jointly to help them come up with this plan, the Lake initially really overstepped by proposing early this year basically a takeover of Mary Bird Perkins and saying, well, you know, we'd like to take it in this direction, and y'all can come in under the Franciscan Missionaries of Our Lady system. And that really did not – that sort of set the tone for things to head south. But to their credit, I mean, they did – and they've admitted, you know, they stepped back, realized Mary Bird did not want to be taken over. Mary Bird has a long, proud history, wanted to retain its autonomy. And so they came back with a joint operating proposal, but the negotiations were slow, and Mary Bird felt like the Lake was dragging its feet and intentionally trying to hang them out there, you know, where they would be forced to accept their offer. And Mary Bird had to go out and look for another backer.
All right, 877-217-5757. If you'd like to talk with Stephanie Regal, editor of the Business Report, and the stage is set. Mary Bird Perkins and Our Lady of the Lake are separating unless something changes to stop that inertia. And listener, this is Tracy at the Capitol asking, where does Mary Bird Perkins go? Does it stay in its current location, or does it have to shop for a new venue? What's going to go on in that realm?
So Mary Bird Perkins owns that building. Now, it has a ground lease with the Lake, but it's like a long-term ground lease. And so as long as it remains a nonprofit, it can stay on the property. But it owns the building. And, you know, that was originally developed as a radiation oncology center. And so they've got literally all this cutting-edge radiation technology, and it's in that building, and it's not going anywhere. The doctors group that's going to be partnering with them is an independent group, but it's going to be affiliating exclusively with Mary Bird to provide chemotherapy infusion. The Lake is taking its infusion bays and equipment that it was providing with them out of Mary Bird. The Lake also employed the nurses and the infusion therapists that actually did the work at Mary Bird. So they go away, but Mary Bird will hire its own people and get its new equipment with money from this new partner that it is joining with. So the building's not going anywhere. The facility's not going anywhere. I mean, I think the bigger picture, Jim, that's so interesting that people don't understand is really the convoluted, complex business nature of healthcare today. Nobody really knows who owns what, right, and who employs who and where the money's coming from, because our insurance companies pay for all of it, you know, so we are not invested in really knowing where our healthcare dollars are going and who's getting them. And I don't know, until we untangle that, the whole thing is just so complex, it's almost beyond the scope of the average person to really understand what's going on.
All right, another listener. This is Hal on Bluebonnet asking about, Tom on Bluebonnet asking about Richard Lipsey's involvement in this. I understand he's not a happy camper, and as we know, Richard Lipsey's involved in everything, including the Coach O coaching saga. But what's Lipsey's involvement in this?
Well, Lipsey's mother was one of the founders of the Mary Bird Perkins Cancer Center over 50 years ago, and Richard Lipsey has been a huge supporter of Mary Bird Perkins and was among those who was very vocal last week or week before last, and actually called the FMOL system greedy, and criticized the leadership of FMOL, OLOL's parent organization, for the way it was handling this breakup. And as you know, if you followed the saga, there was a lot of, you know, there was some name calling and some accusations made publicly that sort of shook things up. And Lips was among those who was very vocal in his criticism.
All right, 877-217-5757. We will take a short break here, but we do want to note that this is fall membership time and your contributions are essential. And if you like Talk Louisiana, we love it when you contribute during this hour. And you can call and get out in fewer than 89.3 seconds by dialing 855-893-9753. 855-893-9753. You can also click the donate button at WRKF.org. And the WRKF socks are back. The new socks feature a couple of headphone-wearing alligators having a conversation on mic, Talk Louisiana style. High-quality USA-made socks in green, blue, and ivory argyle. And we're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. And if you got a moment or two independent of listening and calling this show, please call us at 855-893-9753 to show your support for WRKF. We have about 4,000 members, but we know that each week as many as 100,000 people in our community listen to WRKF. And some people, of course, listen in places far away from Baton Rouge, but or South Central Louisiana. But if you have never been a member, we'd like for you to become one. And becoming a member of the family is something that will make you feel good and make us feel better. And you can get your WRKF socks by contributing $10 a month or more, and you'll be a stylish individual in addition to being an informed one. 855-893-9753. And for the show, 877-217-5757 with Stephanie Regal, the editor of the Business Report and host of Out to Lunch, Dan Downtown. Dan, you're on with Stephanie. Good morning to you, Dan.
Good morning. Yeah, Ms. Regal, as far as greed goes, the Lakes lobbyists got the legislature to afford it immunity from state employment discrimination laws because of alleged nonprofit status, despite the Lakes executives making big buck salaries.
All right. Stephanie, are you on that story?
I am not familiar with that, but I don't doubt it. I mean, look, it's a huge institution, and it does a lot of good for the community, like any large community hospital, you know, that provides tertiary care, that provides uncompensated care, and it's you know, been a very, very powerful and influential and important and valuable you know, force in this community. But like everything else, any large institution, you know, with a lot of power like that, is able to make things happen, you know, that benefit it, for whether, you know, and I'm,
it's one of the biggest employers in the state of Louisiana, not just in this community. The Lake is immense.
Well, the FMOL system that owns the Lake also has five other hospitals around the state. And you see that in healthcare, too, where the number of providers is really consolidating. And you basically have, you know, just like three large systems in the state at this point. The LCMC and Ochsner, both based out of New Orleans, and the FMOL based in Baton Rouge. And they control the lion's share of hospitals around the state.
Barry in Mid-City, you're on with Stephanie Regal. Hi, Barry.
Hey, good morning. I was happy to give my gift in honor of Talk Louisiana.
Yes, and they have informed me of this, and I was reading your kind words today, Barry. You're very touching. Thank you, Rabbi. I love you. But keep going.
I love you, too, and I love Out to Lunch. And Stephanie, is this time now for a national health system?
A national health system.
The national health system. Look, I can't speak to that because I just don't know enough about national health care. I know what we have is fraught with a lot of problems, you know, and the costs keep escalating. Like I said, the complexities are so great. I think it's definitely time for some changes, but I don't know how that, you know, how that really happens. I don't see it coming from government. I mean, I see it really coming from the private sector, and I see a lot more consolidation, for better or worse, you know, where you're going to see the Ochsners of the world growing larger, where you're going to see some of the other Catholic health systems growing larger, and probably eventually, before too long, another Catholic health system will acquire FMOL. I'm not saying this year or next year, but I would think within the next decade, something like that's going to happen, you know, and I think the market forces are just going to drive the large providers to consolidate and the larger ones who are more progressive and technologically savvy are going to continue to grow bigger.
877-217-5757. Please be brief in your remarks to Stephanie. Henry at the Country Club. Henry, good morning.
Good morning, Miss Stephanie. Good morning, Mr. Jim. Miss Stephanie, I want to compliment you on your coverage of this story. It is a sad story, but there's one angle that you haven't covered yet, and I wish you would do this. Sometimes we got to get the money changers out of the temple. How about just talking to one of the nuns or several of the nuns one-on-one? Maybe that could bring things to a peaceful resolution.
I never had much luck negotiating with nuns. But Stephanie,
I don't know if he's being serious or sarcastic. I mean, you literally cannot get to the nuns. In fact, about 4 or 5 years ago, before I really realized how things work over there, I tried to do a feature story on the nuns, and I thought it would be great to really understand these you know, great ladies and all that they've done and how they've grown the system. And no, they wouldn't sit down with us, and they are very, very old now. And in fact, there's a leadership structure in place where they don't even really call as many shots as they used to. There's a whole sort of committee that took over about 4 or 5 years ago, and the nuns are not acting alone
so
at all.
Henry's he's blaming the nuns, so I guess this...
blame the nuns.
Okay.
All
right. Well,
I don't think you can blame anybody. I mean, there are two, like I said, two different perspectives. But
I think it's fair to say.
Money.
Go ahead.
And people, no, I mean, there's just a tremendous amount of money, particularly in, you know, and chemotherapy, right? And the Lake, because it's such a big hospital, gets deep discounts from the federal government on drug prices. And then is able to collect that revenue. It's a very...
Well, speaking of nuns, and we've got some listeners prodding me to ask Stephanie about a few other things. And I do, before we get to that, but just finishing up, we will talk more, of course, about what's going on with Our Lady of the Lake. But a listener notes that since the nuns are a big part of that facility as a Catholic institution, this could definitely be called a change of habit. The Jay Singh family is matching all donations in loving memory of husband and father, Dr. Jay Singh, this hour. And we want to thank the people who have called to support WRKF. And it is always a pleasure to hear from many of my friends. And I recognize many of these names, most of them. Megan Poole, one of the best people in Baton Rouge. Patricia Jumanville. Thank you, Patricia. Jillian and Joseph Sergio. Cecil Phillips. Martina Ellis. Marshall Simmers, Tim Gunn, all contributing this morning. And a reminder that your gifts are doubled by the Jay Singh family, and the number to call is 855-893-9753. And I have a laundry list of topics that listeners have suggested. And Bill Huey, be patient. We'll get to Coach O. But here's one that Holly in the Garden District asked about, a story in The Hill. Former President Donald John Trump is blasting Senator William Morgan Cassidy, senior senator from Louisiana, after Cassidy said he would not vote for the real estate mogul if he runs for president in 2024. There we go. Bill Cassidy, who voted for the impeachment and voted for an investigation into the insurrection, says President Trump is the first president in the Republican side, at least, to lose the House, the Senate, and the presidency all in 4 years. Cassidy taking on the Gotham man from New York City. And now Trump, as you would expect, responds saying, "Wacky Bill Cassidy can't walk down the street in Louisiana, a state I won by almost 20 points. He could not even be elected dog catcher. The great people curse him. Well, I've seen him on Dalrymple Drive. I don't think anybody's cursing Senator Cassidy, but Stephanie Regal, the gloves are off between the rotund man from New York City and the doctor from Baton Rouge. What do you think?
I don't have any thoughts on that. I don't know. I came on to talk about the lake. I think that's totally what's wrong with politics today, and that we would even talk about what Trump says as an insult just gives him more credit than he deserves. I think thank God for Bill Cassidy for speaking truth.
All right. Well, you said you were going to talk about it, and then you did, so thank you very much. Another story that Stephanie's covering, Barnes & Noble and City Place is apparently shutting down. What is this about?
Well, I didn't say they're shutting down, but their building is for lease or sale. And so what that means is that when their lease is up in 2022, just a few months from now, they're either going to renegotiate a better deal or they will move out, you know, and probably shut down. And it's sad in a way. It's indicative of our changing economy. You know, a big box bookstore can't make it anymore. This one has done better than some. I mean, Barnes & Noble actually experienced a resurgence a bit during the pandemic, but they've also reimagined and repurposed a lot of their space. They don't have shelves and shelves of books anymore. They have other kind of stuff. And, you know, what this store was built around 2000, I mean, it was a different time. So I think, yeah, we'll probably see a different user in there sometime next year. But they could end up staying for a while and just paying month to month. So, like, no immediate plans to shut down, but
all right, well,
definitely their building is being marketed.
That's a tragedy. And if there is a way to preserve it under new ownership, perhaps the name should be appropriately Romer's, because that was Buddy Romer's spot, Barnes & Noble at City Place. Now, the listener notes that Barnes & Noble may be moving out of City Place, but Churchill's may be moving in. Do you know anything about this, Stephanie Regal?
I have heard that they will be moving into the Cove space right there next to El Basha. I talked to the owner and the manager yesterday, who were in the process of moving out of the Jefferson location, but they didn't want to talk about their new plans, so I couldn't get any details on it, but that is the word. So I hope they have found a new home.
Well, I was at Churchill Sunday night for last call. That's 7949 Jefferson Highway, 24 years. That was quite a spot, but Oxner's moving in, and Churchill's is moving out, and Pearson's has shut down, and times are a-changing. But one thing that hasn't changed in the last 41 and a half years is WRKF, and you can contribute and show your support for this entity, a treasure in our community, an oasis of civility in a world of more heat than light. Give us a call. Please contribute at 855-893-9753. Back with Stephanie after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Stephanie Regal, the editor of the Business Report, is with us, and she is also host of Out to Lunch. And right now, the whole town's buzzing about Coach Edward James Orgeron, 60 years old and out of a job at the end of the season, but gets $17 million in walking away money. The LSU Athletic Department, Stephanie covers finances, lost $80 million last year, then invested about another $10 million to revamp Coach O's staff, paying people not to coach and some people to come to coach, including $850,000 for an offensive line coach who makes more than the president and chancellor of LSU. And now $17 million in walking away money for Ed Orgeron. Stephanie, I think his nickname might be appropriately Powerball Ed. It's hard to feel sorry for a man who's quitting $17 million not to work.
No, and I mean, look, these guys go into this, I think, with eyes wide open. They know that, you know, fate is fickle and that all the love is a lot of bull. So I think they know always that this is something that can happen. And I don't feel sorry for him one bit. You know, I don't understand why we keep putting so much money towards this and making these deals. But I guess that's the big thing, and that's what draws people to big public universities and helps brand us and what gets, you know, gets everybody all excited. I've written before about misplaced priorities, so I am not a huge fan of what the SEC or the NCAA or what college athletics has become. I think the whole thing is very toxic and corrupt.
Well, LSU has invested money that perhaps could have been better invested in other places. $85 million for a rec center while the library is crumbling. And by example, that very nice children's museum, the Knock Knock Children's Museum, just down the street from the $85 million rec center, was built for $14 million. So somebody made a lot of money building that facility, and LSU has problems that go beyond athletics and recreation. And with a $600 million endowment, it has about one-third the endowment of none other than Liberty University, Jerry Falwell's university, yeah. Liberty University. And here we're probably going to spend, I would imagine the investment will be close to $100 million for the new coach and his staff when Coach O's replacement is named, Stephanie.
I mean, the flip side of it is that the people who were giving the money, writing the checks, want their money to go to this next great football coach who's going to make us feel great about ourselves because the team wins. I mean, that's the whole thing. If they wanted to give money to the library or to the endowment, they could or they would. I mean, maybe the LSU Foundation didn't work in hard enough. Maybe it is. But, I mean, at the end of the day, the people that can afford to give money to these kinds of things, they're deciding where they want their dollars to go. So, you know, to the extent it's LSU's fault, it's really, it's the system. And it's where our priorities are as a people, you know. And so, you know.
Well, not anything to any degree has been reported about the sexual misconduct cloud that hangs over the football team and the university. And Coach O, of course, his remarks about Gloria Scott, who was sexually mistreated by none other than Darius Geis, all the allegations against Geis, which include an allegation of rape. Coach O apparently knew about these and did nothing about it, and yet that was not an issue then. Might be an issue now that he's walking out the door. But none of these have been resolved, and there's still a major lawsuit from the recruiting person who works very closely with Coach O, Sharon Lewis, that could end up costing the university several more million dollars, Stephanie.
That's right. I mean, none of these issues have been resolved, and you know, as I heard during your news break a minute ago and the protest yesterday, you know, now there's this whole cloud over the French graduate student. I did some extensive reporting earlier this year about two professors under then, you know, Chancellor Bill Richardson in the Ag Center. These stories were horrible and they didn't get any traction. Nobody made any big deal out of it. Now, when Tate came in, he did see to it that Richardson stepped down. But how many other stories are out there? I mean, we know about the stuff in athletics because that gets so much attention and money. But now all we find out about the French student or the stuff in the Ag Center. I mean, what else is going on there? It's a whole culture, and I think that's really, really problematic. And, you know, a new administration comes in and promises action and this and that, but what's really going to change, you know?
And you speak as a graduate of the Manship School, and Stephanie, of course, grew up in New Orleans and came to LSU and ultimately lives in Baton Rouge. So you have an affiliation with LSU that I'm sure is an emotional connection. I loved your story yesterday about how when you were a very young girl, like 3 years old, your first memory was watching the LSU band. So, you have a past that includes this university in a profound way, and yet at the same time, as a journalist, we can't ignore reality, and the reality sometimes is not pretty.
No, it's not. And we grew up in a different era, you know, when things were permissible that are no longer okay and that we now know are not okay. But I had a great experience with LSU, particularly with the Honors College. It was an honors department at the time. But it was fabulous, and I had some fabulous liberal arts professors, and also some really, really great teachers in the J School. You know, none other than Jay Perkins, who taught so many journalists. You know,
made a big impression on your career and the careers of many others. Some Pulitzer Prize winners were affected dramatically in a positive way by one Jay Perkins, and I remember some of my great mentors there, and Jules Demicord and Dale Thorne, Jim Featherston. They made a big impression on my life. All of them gone now, and I think of them regularly, and I think of how my life was enriched by them. And LSU is ultimately about the people. It's a beautiful campus, one of the most beautiful in the world, the library notwithstanding. But it's ultimately, Stephanie, the people that we encounter, and that's what makes that university so special. And by extension, it's what makes this radio station so special. This station, in many ways, is an offshoot of LSU and Southern because of the people who are the most educated. They congregate to WRKF. And you mentioned yesterday, and I took that to heart as well, that you get more response from Out to Lunch than you do for in the community than you do for your reporting in the Business Report.
Often, very often, which I think is just a reflection of how many people listen to WRKF in this community. You know, it's a very, very powerful medium. And the Business Report is more of a niche publication, you know, so we have a very loyal following as well. But it's small and it's concentrated, and WRKF reaches so many people across the capital region, you know, provides such a valuable function. So, yeah, it's a treat that so many people get to hear Out to Lunch, which is a fun, fun show.
Well, we thank you, Stephanie. Keep up your good work, and we'll be listening to
you. Thank
you. On Out to Lunch. And always a pleasure to catch up with the editor of the Business Report, who's, as I said, probably following some wrongdoer right now trying to ferret out information. Keep going.
Thank you.
All right. And in our remaining moments, if you're so inclined, we'd love to hear from you, 855-893-9753. Bill Bryan, member of WRKF, says that Annabelle Armstrong, a longtime journalist, really a fascinating and fun person, she has died. And we wish the best to Annabelle's family and friends, and we will miss her. But WRKF, as mentioned, has been around since January of 1980. It is a staple in the community and rock solid at 89.3 on your dial. And it is there because more than 80% of the contributions come from listeners like you. And if you're so inclined, at $10 a month, you can get the WRKF socks. They were so popular, they're back with a new design featuring a couple of headphone-wearing alligators. They're having a conversation, talk Louisiana style. The high-quality USA-made socks are green, blue, and ivory argyle. And you can see the socks on the donation form when you click the donate button at WRKF.org. We'd like to hear from you again. That number is 855-893-9753. And I've got some people who've called within the last few moments. Maggie Conero, who's been a guest on this show a few times, and it's time to talk with her again. Thank you, Maggie, for your contribution. Dana Henry, thank you, Dana. It's great to hear from you. Roy Bearmore. Gia Novello, thank you, Gia. We all appreciate the contributions that are coming, and if you can get in the next few moments, we promise you we'll get you in and out in fewer than 89.3 seconds if you dial 855-893-9753. Another listener notes that it has not been mentioned on this show, and I must say I've been remiss in not doing so, that Beth Courtney, after 45 years, is retiring at LPB. And she leaves a tremendous legacy in her past, and it will continue into the future. Quite an entity that is also very special in our community, and one that has thrived and has done so with about $5 million a year that comes from the state of Louisiana. WRKF gets no, zero, zilch, no state money, so that you are WRKF. Please give us a call at 893-9753. Or click the donate button at WRKF.org. Again, that's 893-9753, WRKF.org. For Alondra Villarreal, I'm Jim Engster. We're back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.